Yeah, I've had fun at all the talks. Yeah, so I'm going to be talking about joint work with Rich. So I think, so I'm going to try to do two things. I'm going to talk about why nearly isosceles triangles have billiard paths, periodic billiard paths, and then also I want to demonstrate the program we use to discover this. I figure that's sort of appropriate at this conference. So, but before that, I just want to introduce you to the subject. So I'm interested in billiard paths and polygons. So a billiard path and a polygon is just, it's just a path in the interior of a polygon, and it should bounce off the edges of the polygon so that the angle of incidence is the angle of reflection. So I guess this little angle and this little angle should be equal. And then it's periodic if it closes off. I don't know. So especially at the beginning of this talk, if you have any questions, please ask, because it should be pretty basic. So we were motivated by this open question. So the question is, does every polygon have a periodic billiard path? And I thought I'd give you some of the history. So first of all, I'll prove a little later on that acute triangles have a periodic billiard path. And then, well, more recently, I guess people found examples of, I don't know, this is sort of not descriptive, but there's various open sets of polygons that have periodic billiard paths. And these are the, in Borovitz, Galperin, and Stepan were the first people to sort of notice this and sort of list them out in any reasonable way. So perhaps more interesting, so if you have a rational polygon, as a polygon, all these angles are rational multiples of pi. And these things always have billiard paths, periodic billiard paths, and they actually always have a lot of them. So Mazur proved that the growth rate, you could look at the number of periodic billiard paths of length less than t, this function grows with quadratic lower and upper bounds. And then, I guess, Trubetskoy and I guess these people all prove that for these polygons, all for rational polygons, that the set of billiard paths is dense in the unit tangent bundle. Periodic billiard paths. And then Rich proved relatively recently that if you have a triangle and its largest angle is less than 100 degrees, then it has a periodic billiard path. So that's the history. And I guess this is the newest result along these lines. So the theorem is that nearly isosceles triangles have periodic billiard paths. So what I mean here is that you could take there is an open set, and we don't explicitly give it, but there is some open set that contains the isosceles triangles, and every triangle in this open set has a periodic billiard path. That's the theorem. Okay, so I thought I'd say, I'm going to try to talk a little bit about the proof of this. And so the main idea, I guess the first real idea is this, that if you look at a billiard path in a polygon, there's this nice trick. Instead of bouncing off the edge, you can continue through the edge and reflect the polygon instead. And it's sort of stupid, but somehow it's a really good idea somehow to do this. So now if you want to recover where you are as a billiard path, you just fold back up, and that recovers the billiard path. So the idea is just to repeat this over and over again, and that's the first basic idea in polygon billiards, I think. So here's a triangle, and here's a billiard path, which is not periodic. So associated to some billiard path, you can there's a sequence of sides you hit. So you just label the sides of some integers here, and then you can record the string of, so if you orient this thing so it's traveling rightward, I guess the orbit type of this is the sequence of sides you hit, and it just the sequence of labels of sides you hit. So it's 2, 1, 0, 2, 0, 1, 2, 0. So you should think of this is sort of an equivalence, you can think of this as sort of an equivalence relation on billiard paths, or on say finite arcs or periodic billiard paths, that sort of makes sense even if, as you perturb the polygon it lies in. So that's sort of what the purpose of this is. So it lets you compare paths inside different polygons. Okay, so now I want to talk about, so what has to be true to have a periodic billiard path in terms of this thing we call the unfolding, which is when you reflect a polygon iteratively. So what has to be true? So there's really two conditions to check. So remember, so if you have a path like this inside the unfolding, then you can fold it back up and you get some billiard path. So we want to know when we fold it back up and we get back to the same starting point and going the same direction. So there's actually two things to check. So assume that you've reflected the polygon an even number of times. This makes things sort of simpler. So you assume you reflected an even number of times. So there's some orientation preserving isometry of the plane, which takes the first triangle here to the last triangle here. And so there's two conditions to check. I'm not sure which one I list first. So you want to show that you come back to the same point, traveling in the same direction. So you have a vector associated with the starting point and a vector associated with this ending point, and you want to rotate it back, and you want it to be pointing the same direction. So the only way you can possibly do that is if the last polygon here is a translate of the original. So that's the first condition. And you should notice that this is actually a closed condition on the polygon itself. Somehow, if you have a sequence of things and the first polygon differs from the last by a translation, then so will the limit. And then the second condition is that, well, you need to be able to draw a line from some point in the first polygon to some point in the last, to the corresponding point in the last polygon. So this is actually an open condition, right? This makes sense even if the first and last polygon differ by a rotation. You have, a point here and a corresponding point here, and can you draw a line segment between them that stays entirely within this unfolding? So that's actually an open condition. So there's two conditions here, an open condition and a closed condition. So I'm going to go through and sort of explain what you have to do to verify these conditions. And I guess especially important is this closed condition. So how can we understand this sort of closed condition? So the idea is, so here's some unfolding, and I want to see, well, when does the first triangle differ from the last one by a translation? So here's what you can do, I guess. So every even guy differs by some rotation or translation or something. So if you want to get from this first polygon to this second polygon, you just rotate, I guess, by 2 alpha. So you can just go through and iteratively compute these things. So this first polygon differs from the first one by 2 alpha rotation, and then to get here, you rotate, I guess, by 2 gamma. And then to get here, you have to rotate in the negative direction by, I guess, 2 beta, and so forth. So to be a translate, so for the first one to be a, and the last one to differ by translation, this number needs to be 0 mod 2 pi, I guess. So that's your condition. So here's a nice, I'm not sure who discovered this first, but here's a nice trick that tells you when the first and the last differ by a translation. So what you can do is you can just write down your word, which should be of even length, so that as you reflect through, you have an orientation preserving isometry from the beginning to the end. And then you can compute the total angle just by sort of looking at pairs of words. And then you can just sum up the total rotation numbers from the beginning to the end and check if you get 0 or it's also okay, I guess, to get 2 alpha plus 2 beta plus 2 gamma, because that sum is 2 pi. So now you look and you can write down exactly what you get for each pair. And here's a clever trick. So you can look at the word and you want to see when you get 0 or 2 pi. Well, you look at the number of times 1 appears in an even position and subtract the number of times it appears in an odd position, so you get 0 for 1. And the same for 2 and 0. I guess that's the trick. And you can just check just explicitly using this that it works. And it's if and only if. Okay, so this is the closed condition, and you can just look at the word and decide if it's closed. So assuming you satisfy this closed condition, the other condition on the Billiard path is open. So it should determine an open set. So the orbit tile is the set of triangles with a specific periodic Billiard path, and if you satisfy this closed condition that I just said, then it's open. And otherwise, it's closed, and you had to satisfy that closed condition, which means you're going to be some open subset of a rational line. So this orbit tile is a subset of the parameter space, and it's either open or closed depending on if it satisfies that one condition I listed on the previous slide. Oh, it's not. Sorry, that's not exactly right. So it's open if it satisfies that previous condition. It's an open subset of a closed line, otherwise. Anyway, stop me if you have any questions, because I'm not sure I assume I'm going at a reasonable pace. So I thought I'd do some extremely simple proofs. So here's an unfolding for a pretty simple word. So just 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2. And I want to prove that this unfolding corresponds to a periodic billiard path in every acute triangle. So here's the trick. So I just thought we'd do one simple proof. So this word actually has some sort of odd symmetry, right? So if you translate the word by, if it's periodic, so you should think the first half of the word and the second half differ by, you know, are the same. So what this means for the unfolding is that there's an orientation reversing isometry of the plane, which takes, say, these first three triangles to the second three triangles and so forth. So how are we going to find a billiard path? Well, so there's a sort of orientation reversing isometry of the plane, and so typically an orientation reversing isometry of the plane is a glide reflection, or maybe actually I think that's always true. So it turns out the billiard path is exactly the axis of this glide reflection. I don't know. And here's a nice trick to find the axis of a glide reflection. So if you have a glide reflection, then what it does is it takes a point in it, right? It translates along this line, and then it reflects in the line. And if you want to detect the line, you can just take the midpoint of a point and its image, and that'll lie on your line. So if you do this twice, you pick out your line uniquely. So what's the axis of this glide reflection in this case? Well, you take this first triangle to, I guess, this fourth triangle by a glide reflection. And for instance, this point here goes to this point here. And so the midpoint of these two things should be on the axis of the glide reflection. So it should be the altitude of this triangle right here, or where the altitude hits the bottom. So here's the picture. So you draw these points and connect them up. And you know these three points are all collinear because they're all giving you points on the axis of the glide reflection. So the theorem is that if you build that all acute triangles have a periodic billiard path of this type because the altitudes intersect the opposite sides. And then if you connect them up, you get a billiard path. So if you were to draw the billiard path, it actually is exactly the path that joining the three points where the altitudes hit the opposite side of the triangle. And that those points only exist when your triangle is acute, I guess. So you can use this to prove that this is exactly the orbit tile. Okay, so that's an example. So the orbit tile in this case is a set of all acute triangles. So here's a non-stable case, or unstable case. So here, what I've done is, so if you have an isosceles triangle, you can build a billiard path just by taking the midpoint of the special side, I guess, the unique side stands out, and just dropping perpendiculars to the other two sides. And this is a billiard path that just sort of bounces back and forth. But as soon as you perturb the triangle so it's no longer isosceles, this path goes away. And a good way to check that is you can just use this trick we were talking about with the unfolding. So here I've unfolded the word, and to get from the first triangle to the last triangle, it requires a rotation by 2 alpha minus 2 beta. And you need that to be a translation. So it's only a translation when alpha equals beta. I guess you can prove that this orbit tile is unstable, and the tile is exactly the set of isosceles triangles. So for our theorem, this is totally irrelevant because we want to prove that, you know, there's an open set of containing isosceles triangles that have periodic billiard paths. So that's the introduction. I guess if you have, maybe, I guess because there's no questions, I guess everyone understood everything. So I thought at this point I'd just show you how McBilliards work. So this is a computer program I wrote with Rich. And yeah. That's good, yeah. So this thing here, this is the parameter space of all triangles, I guess. And you can actually see the triangle on the right. So here's a, and you can move around. So this program, the first thing it does is it lets you pick a triangle. And then given a triangle, you can search for a periodic billiard path of, say, so you picked out a triangle and you can search for periodic billiard paths. And so I searched for billiard paths here using this sort of purple thing here. And it tells you, so what I did was I searched for all periodic billiard paths in this triangle with length less than 50. So length is here a combinatorial length, so the sequence of number of sides you hit. And it returned some search results, So they're all given icons. I'll explain what the icon is maybe in a minute. But so here's, yeah, I apologize. So I sort of messed with this program a little bit at some point, and I never fixed it. So it draws the billiard path associated to it, and for some reason it decides to draw two of them. So whenever you have one billiard path, there's always a parallel one. So if you have a periodic billiard path and you perturb it a little bit and make it travel in the same direction, then you'll still have a billiard path, at least for a little while. I mean, for small perturbations. So this gives you two billiard paths in this triangle with the same orbit type. So that's what it does. Maybe it's a little more impressive to see. Let's search for some more, and hopefully we'll find them. There you go. So at 50, it didn't find any, but now that I searched up to 120, it found at least 10 billiard paths. So maybe I'll explain. Maybe I'll explain what these icons are, just really briefly. So there's a sort of technical explanation, and there's a not so technical explanation. So the idea is you can look at the hexagonal grid in the plane, and suppose you wanted to just keep track of, we want to look at a word W in 0, 1, and 2. And I label all my horizontal edges 0, and I'll say positive slope 1's 1 and negative slope 1's 2. So then if you have a word, this gives you a starting point, this gives you a path on the, you know, some sort of path on the hexagonal grid. So that's what this is drawing. And sort of maybe the elementary reason why this is relevant is that a word is stable if and only if this path closes up. And you can convince yourself that, yeah, somehow, the point is, I guess, if you have 0 appearing twice, like here, so we wanted to count the number of zeros with positive sign at even points and odd sign at the others. And you see that when you have 0 and a positive thing, you add 1 to your vector. And then when you get a negative position, you're traveling this way. So somehow this makes it all add up. So you end up back in the same place if you're stable. So those two statements are equivalent if this path closes up, or if the word is stable. So that's basically what this program does. So it does a whole lot more, I guess. But on a basic level, this is sort of the idea. So then you can pick one of these. So I'm going to pick this guy of length 64, and you can actually plot the orbit tile, which I defined for you before. Does it work? Wow. Oh, okay. It just happens. So it happens to be small. So this tile here is, so the computer computes the tile, which is a set of polygons with this billiard path, and it just plots it on the screen. And so that's the set of billiard paths. Maybe this is not the, I don't know if this is the best example because the tile is so small. But then you can sort of wiggle the wiggle the triangle and see how the billiard path perturbs.
So the red and the purple are parallel, are they the extremes of the strip?
I think I set it up so there's a strip of periodic billiard paths, and I think I set it up so the red and the purple are a third of the way in. Yeah, so this is, so the width of the beam should be twice the width of three times the distance between them probably. I'm not 100% sure it's a third, but I guess you probably don't care. So here's a bigger one. Maybe it's a little easier to see. Yeah, so this is the tile for a periodic billiard path of length 18. And here you go. So now you can perturb. So actually, I don't think that looking at the billiard path is really the best way to understand things, but you can see it might be a little instructive to see sort of what happens as you get moved to the edge of a tile. So if you move towards the edge of a tile, what should be happening is your billiard path should be getting sucked into a corner. So somehow, they're getting closer together. So there's sort of a width of a beam here, and These are supposed to be measuring, I guess the distance between them should be proportional to the width of this beam of periodic billiard paths. And as I move closer to the edge of the tile, the beam should get thinner and thinner and thinner, and eventually they should die out. And sort of the reason why it should die out is because, well, in the limit, the path should be hitting a vertex, I guess. Anyway, so there you go, that's sort of a limiting path. So it's maybe, let me draw this unfolding too. Yeah, if I go to a corner, then it should be getting close to two edges, or two vertices, maybe not different vertices. So vertices with multiplicity two. So here, I'll try to move into this one. There you go. So somehow so now it should be degenerated in two directions, I guess. Okay, so I can also, this program also, actually, it probably does a million things. But one other thing it does is it draws this unfolding. And it's actually a lot easier to see what's happening when you degenerate, when you look at the unfolding. So remember, so actually, the unfolding to my talk, I require that the first triangle to be, or my slides, I require the first triangle to differ from the last one by translation. But here, I just forget the last triangle, and you have to imagine it sitting there. So here's our strip, and it's just sort of I've drawn the maximal strip of things that make it from the first triangle to the last triangle while staying entirely within the unfolding. So that's what this is. And you can sort of see how the tile degenerates here, too. So if you move, so I move to one edge, I guess one of these, this top vertex here is coming close to this bottom vertex here, and nothing can get through eventually. So that's sort of, and if you keep going through, then I guess eventually this vertex is actually above this one. So all these unfoldings are drawn to the, well, they're all stable words. So the first triangle should differ from the last by translation. And they're all drawn so that translation is horizontal. So I just rotate the picture so it's horizontal. So that's why these beams are all horizontal. Okay, so here I'll go into a vertex too to keep us all happy. Let's see. So if you go into a vertex, I guess there should be a triangle which is sort of degenerating, I guess. So maybe it looks like this bottom vertex and this top vertex are getting closer, and as well as this top vertex is coming down. So there's sort of three points that are getting bad. Okay. Let me think. So now maybe it's a good time to actually start the talk. So I want to talk about billiards and nearly isosceles triangles. So maybe just to sort of get a feeling of what you have to do to sort of prove things or some of the pains we've had to go through, I thought I'd first talk about the acute triangles. Well, we have Fagnano's theorem, or the Fagnano path gives us a periodic billiard path in every acute triangle. So the next interesting triangle is the 45-45-90 triangle, because it's the first time we're not acute, assuming I sort of, you know, traveling on a line leaving the acute triangle. So let me explain how we handle this, the 45-45-90 triangle. Actually, this is first handled by Rich in his 100-degree result. This thing, it's, you're right, there's a lot of buttons. So this point in here is the 45-45-90 triangle. I never really, yeah, so these vertical lines are when your angle is pi over n for some n. So this is a line pi over 4. And I can zoom into this point. And the big blue tile in the upper right, that corresponds to the acute triangles, and this is the Fagnano curve. So if I pick a, let's see, so if I pick a, I have to select the tile first. So this is the unfolding for the Fagnano curve. So that covers all the acute triangles. So there's some other trick you need to cover the right triangles, and maybe I'll mention that in a little bit. But there's some unstable tile which covers the right triangles, and then there's these five tiles which go in there and sort of cover the remaining neighborhood of this point, except that's not quite true, because you have to go back and remember. So these tiles are actually open sets. So if you look carefully, this computer probably is not enough to convince you, this computer picture, but But these two tiles, this purple tile and this blue tile, they actually don't quite contain a vertical line there. So this handles basically everything but these four arrays coming out of this point and also the right triangles, which is this right triangles are a diagonal line here. So then you need a couple more. Let me show you these. So you actually need some fairly long unfoldings. So even to prove that the 45-45-90 triangle, you know, has a neighborhood of polygons with a periodic billiard path is somewhat of a pain, because somehow you have to prove that some sort of fairly long, I'm not actually sure, some fairly long word corresponds to a periodic billiard path in things in this region here. And that's sort of, actually it's not that easy of a task, I mean, even just that. Because somehow what we have to prove is that if you look at the unfolding is that all these top vertices here lie above all the bottom vertices as long as you're inside this region, this specific region. And that's sort of, so that's the check. So you can think of this tile is determined by if the billiard path is of length n, you have to compare every top vertex to every bottom vertex. So there's sort of n squared things to check. And there's various tricks you can use to cut that down to some manageable number. And then basically at the simplest level, what we do is we just check these things by hand. And verify them. So that handles everything but these four arrays. And then if you search a little more, well, I'm not actually searching here, then you can find some tiles that actually lop over these arrays and take care of this remaining point. So,
it seems like a lot of things that is below the first guy in the line.
Down here? You mean? Oh yeah, that's right. That's the main trick. I mean, right. If you look at a path like this, maybe I'll try to get it inside. Yeah. So if you look at a path like this, you can eliminate some vertices by sort of noticing that these vectors point downward relative to this horizontal vector. So this one lies below this one, and that might improve you. So you might have to check this one, but maybe you can sort of use some arguments that say you don't have to check these. And you have to make these arguments, though. It's sort of very, writing one of these papers is sort of gets tedious at some point. I mean, our paper is about, you know, 70 pages or something. And these are sort of the easier arguments. But anyway, so all these tiles, they handle the 45-45-90 triangle. So maybe let me switch back to my slides why? Yeah, they're all open.
Set.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, perfect. Thank you. You're helping. So there's some theorem sitting behind this. So the theorem is that right triangles don't have stable periodic billiard paths. So you can't find given any right triangle, you can't find an open tile that contains that point. So this sort of forbids you from actually, you know, finding, you know, being able to handle the right triangles in some sort of more reasonable way. I guess we already talked about this. So Rich's theorem actually handles a 45-45-90 triangle too. So it's sort of, I'm being a little redundant by talking about it in this talk. But anyway, so this is the same picture you saw from McBilliard. Okay, so yeah, maybe I'll, let me switch back to McBilliard now. Actually, there's some reason why we're interested in isosceles triangles, and that's because they actually seem relatively easy at some point to us, as compared to anything else you could do. So this is why. So we found this family of this two-parameter family of tiles, which cover a lot of the isosceles line. So here it is. Yeah, so I actually first proved this in my thesis. So that triangle up there with all that stuff coming out, that's the 45-45-90 triangle. Then down here diagonally this is going to be the triangle with angles pi over 6, pi over 6. It's another isosceles triangle. And what you're seeing here is that is part of an infinite family of tiles which come down and actually and cover this whole you know, they pile up. So there's a countable list of tiles here which pile up like this. And then they cover actually all the way to this point. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about the proof of this. But yeah, they don't have stable, but they...
The rational guys have scripts with rational right triangle.
So I didn't say there's no billiard paths. I said no stable billiard paths. So there's a right triangle...
So having a script is not enough to be... What's the definition of stable?
It means you can perturb the triangle arbitrarily and still find the billiard path. Remember, there was these two. Yeah, remember that you weren't paying attention earlier. there's these two conditions, right? There's this open condition when you look at the unfolding. There's also this closed condition. So that the closed condition is failing as soon as you perturb. We can talk. Yeah, we can talk afterwards. Yeah. So okay. So this is the idea. So we're going to find this family of tiles that cover all these. This interval here. And actually, if you look at the complete family, they cover, yeah, they cover every interval joining, so they cover an open interval connecting pi over 6 to pi over 8, or in general, pi over 2n to pi over 2n plus 2. And that's true for all n. So, okay. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the proof of this. So let me switch back to. But I hope this isn't nauseating. That was one thing I was worrying about when I was preparing this, but sort of switching between McBilliards and sort of more and this. Will it give a what? Sorry.
I mean, your picture, yeah, doesn't give an open subset containing the set of
oh, so it doesn't. That's right. This is why we thought it would be. This is definitely not the complete proof. Yeah, so. So this gives an open set containing this open interval here of isosceles triangles. And then we're going to need to have some sort of separate argument to handle the endpoints. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, so this is actually supposed to be the easy part of the argument. So anyway, so if I wasn't showing you McBilliards too, you'd be interested in these slides. So to prove this, there's two sort of stupid principles that I'm going to use. And so the first principle is that if you have a billiard path and there's a special point of an obtuse isosceles triangle, the midpoint of the long side. And if you have a billiard path which starts out by leaving the midpoint and then bounces around and then comes back to the midpoint, then you can just reflect the billiard path and it closes up automatically. And then the same thing is true as if you start at the midpoint and eventually you end up horizontally and crossing this vertical line. Then you reflect and you get back. So these are sort of stupid principles, but they're the main idea in the proof. So, yeah, if I'd gone through this carefully, so the first thing is, so this word turns out to be unstable, but it's going to be relevant to us. So this unfolding. So I'm going to build the big unfolding by from pieces that look like this. That's sort of why it's relevant. So the first thing you have to prove is that this unfolding here corresponds to a billiard path. And this is actually relatively easy. So you, with certain conditions on the angle. So somehow this condition is exactly guaranteeing that this angle here is less than pi. So as soon as that angle is less than pi, you can join this midpoint here to this midpoint here. And then you're joining midpoint to midpoint, so this corresponds to some closed periodic billiard path, and it turns out to be exactly this unfolding. So that's sort of this sort of silly proof. So this is a little more interesting. So we have a two-parameter family words. So there's actually two parts to the proof. So there's this n, which is determining this interval inside the parameter space. And then there's this m, which is giving us the individual tiles inside that cover parts of that interval. So we're going to let, there's a separate proof that handles m is 1, and then m is bigger than 1. So there's really two parts to this proof. So for the case where m is 1, you look at this unfolding. I don't know, I don't think this is, maybe this is not so enlightening, but I mean, somehow, I don't know, yeah, the argument's always the same. Somehow you need to, so I want to take now a horizontal edge and connect it to a midpoint, and that's going to correspond to some periodic billiard path, sort of by that reflection argument before. So what's the trick? So you just measure some angles. You need to make sure M1 is M1 drops below this horizontal line here containing B, and you need to make sure it doesn't drop below D. So it turns out if you're between these angles, then that's true. That's how the proof works. For this unfolding. Yeah, I don't know. That's probably sufficient detail. That was far from rigorous, but I'm sure that's sufficient detail for you. So then there's this subsequent. So that was the first big tile. Actually, maybe if I flip back to McBilliard, what that thing handled was from this point here up to this point here, we proved that this thing had a periodic Billiard path. And then there's the remaining interval. So somehow things get more regular in this interval. I mean, somehow this is a different shape than these guys. And that's sort of, I think that's intuitively why I need a different argument. But here's the argument for the remaining tile. So the idea is this. So you look at the unfolding, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to take some horizontal segment, and we're going to join it to some midpoint, and that's going to correspond to some Billiard path. So the idea is that these family of tiles are chosen such that the number of these, remember I looked at these W words, which were these first guys I proved had a Billiard path. Well, it's just sort of some initial triangle followed by some sequence of W's. So they're sort of marching along. And we proved that W corresponded to a periodic Billiard path inside an isosceles triangle. It was unstable, but it still corresponds to some strip. So so this family is sort of marching along in some periodic fashion. So the idea is to just look at sort of an infinite. So you first do, so you, so these words Y, sorry, they all look like zero, and then you apply this word W we had some M times, and then do something else. So the idea is the midpoint we're interested in lies somewhere in this WN. So instead of looking at zero WN to the M, we look at zero WN to the infinity, and we just need to find that midpoint that we can hit. So here's this, yeah, this is sort of, I like this proof, which is sort of part of the reason why I'm talking about it. But here's the trick. So you look at this unfolding, and this is sort of this periodic infinite family of things, and we want to show that we can draw a horizontal line that stays within the unfolding and eventually hits some midpoint. And that's all we want. So hitting midpoint 5 will tell us we get the word YN 5. So here's the argument. So there's this point you have to pass under A, and then all these other points are actually, this whole family is sort of sloping upward. So somehow all these other points are above A. So there's some strip of horizontal lines that starts above D and passes underneath A. And that's the strip of lines that might possibly hit a midpoint. And then these midpoints are sort of, because this W corresponded to the periodic Billiard path, these midpoints are sort of rate going up linearly, like this. And somehow we want to prove that eventually some midpoint lies within this strip. So what's the proof? It's actually, yeah, maybe, actually, can I have a light? Yeah, so the proof is you have this strip, and you have this linearly increasing set of points that's sort of badly drawn here. But so the proof that this strip contains some point is just to say that the amount, the y-coordinate, the change in y-coordinate between the points, so from here to here, is less than the width of a strip. So it's this delta y, I guess, is less than w. And then if these points are going up, then some one of them has to lie within the strip. That's the proof. And so that turns out to work. You just have to measure the distance. You just have to check that inequality is satisfied. And I actually, yes, this is some stupid graph of the ratio between the width and the width of the strip and this change in y. So anyway, so it's all bigger than one, which is good for us. So that's how we prove that. So let me go back, switch now back to McBilliard. So I assume you all just understood everything I just said and are with me and totally agree that all these open intervals are covered with some open set. So then you have the endpoints to deal with. So I think this is basically the state we were at when we decided to think about isosceles triangles. We sort of, well, thought this was true, and then we wanted to finish the job. So that turned out to be more of a headache than we thought. So first you might, so let me utilize McBilliard. So we can go into pi over 6, and search for periodic billiard paths, and you find something. You find some big giant tile. And then maybe, well, why don't we pick another point? So you can search at pi over 10, and you can do the same thing. Oh, I didn't find anything. So maybe if I search for words of length, I don't remember what I need, like 250. I don't know, maybe this is good. Yeah, so I found a word, and we've covered pi over 10. But, okay, I won't bore you by doing it, but what we did was we tried to search at pi over 8, and we searched for a very long time, and we didn't find anything that covered it. So it turns out, I hope this is not too nice. So here's our theorem regarding these points. So 8 is the first example of a power of 2. And we proved, so triangles with angle pi over 2 to the k don't lie in the interior of an orbital. But on the other hand, everybody else does. That's the theorem. So somehow I could bore you all day by searching at pi over 8, we'd never be able to cover it with an orbital. So let me say, this is sort of bad behavior. I mean, this sort of made us unhappy, I guess. I mean, it makes our lives hard. Because we'd be done if we found it for... I mean, we're done somehow with everything that's not a power of 2 now. But on the other hand, it could be worse somehow. So Rich proved in his 100-degree result, in one of the papers on the 100-degree result, that the 30-60-90 triangle has no finite cover by... No neighborhood of the 30-60-90 triangle has a finite cover by orbitals. So remember that... We did this for the 45-45-90 triangle, and we found about 9 that did it, but it turns out there's none, no finite list that'll cover the 30-60-90 triangle. And we also think that's true for these pi over 2 to the power k. But, yeah. And I think, we did that. So that's the state. So that's not the end of the story, right? We still have to handle pi over 2 to the powers of k. So to prove our theorem. It turns out that 3 of the quadrants are relatively easy. I think you're seeing a pattern. We're sort of zooming in. So let me plot them and plot the tiles that cover 3 of the quadrants. It's not what I wanted. Not 3D. Okay, this is good. I forget where I am here. Is pi over 8? Yeah, no, pi over 10. So somehow we're actually a little lucky here. So we want to cover these three quadrants. And actually the first family we looked at covered one of the quadrants, or the interior of one of the quadrants. And we're lucky, we find some more tiles. And not only do they cover each of these two, the interiors of these two quadrants, they actually lop over this edge here, just barely. So we're sort of a little bit lucky. So we're a little lucky that this actually lops over and we don't have to look for any more. So this manages to handle all these quadrants. And that was pi over 8. Yeah, so it actually, and this, all the, this whole proof actually turns out to work again and redundantly prove that these other endpoints are also in the interior of the set of polygons that have periodic billiard paths. Anyway. So there's this family of things that cover the three quadrants. And then, let me give you the sort of punchline. I thought I might talk about the proof, but it's probably ambitious. So this is the last step. So we conjectured that these points here, these endpoints, they require infinitely many tiles to cover them. So we're not going to have some finite list which does it. But... Yeah, here's what it looks like. Each one of these points, these endpoints, there's a family of tiles, a countable list of tiles, which come down and asymptotically cover some tiny little neighborhood of this. So this is what we prove. So I don't know. I'll try to zoom in. Actually, at some point, McBilliard, I don't know. I think Java uses floating point arithmetic to draw polygons and things. And if you zoom in too far, there's all this error. So yes, this is what they look like. So let me actually switch to pi over 6, because I think you can see the pattern quicker. Yeah, so here's this family at pi over 6. This exists at every endpoint, not just the points we have trouble with. So there's this family of tiles which come down. And maybe I'll say, so roughly how we prove that this covers this quadrant, we need to prove it covers this closed quadrant, is that you prove that these tiles are sort of, well, you want to, they start looking similar, more similar, more similar as you zoom in. Round off error. Anyway, they start looking more and more alike as you zoom in. And we prove that if you rescale them properly, that they converge in the Hausdorff sense, if you take the closures of these tiles. And this is the idea. Let me actually go to the theorems. So we covered three of the quadrants, and then there's this remaining closed quadrant we have to handle. So here's the theorem. Let's see. So there's a sequence of tiles which cover this a little epsilon neighborhood of this quadrant. And here's the point. Here's the theorem that allows you to do this. So we want to look at these tile shapes. And the idea is, well, we want to rescale them so that they're sort of converging the Hausdorff topology. So it turns out the right thing is to rescale them quadratically. So you want to multiply them by k squared. And then essentially they actually converge to some convex quadrilateral. So actually it's a polygon. So the edges are linear. And I guess, I think, I like this additional condition, but there's also other ways you could phrase it. But not only does the polygon, these closures of these tiles converge in the Hausdorff topology, but also the boundaries of these tiles converge to the boundaries of this quadrilateral in the Hausdorff topology. So what this is useful for, this convergence, what it guarantees is that, well, if you have any polygonal subset of the limit that lies in the interior of the limit, then you have a sequence of things that force both the closed set and the boundary converge, then eventually that closed set is contained within, eventually in the sequence you contain this closed set. That makes sense. So the approximates eventually contain this exact closed set. So then the idea is you want to look at, so you can find some trapezoid like this that lies in here. And then you want to, so we were scaling things by k squared, basically. And now you want to scale them back, shrink them back down by dividing by 1 over k squared. So we know that when we scale by k squared, we get this little trapezoid in here. And now we want to shrink it back by k squared, and we get a trapezoid inside the tile. And the point is that if the ratios of the scaling factors go to 1 in the limit, then you can guarantee that you contain this closed quadrant. That's the idea. Somehow, if the scaling factors were exponential, that would be bad. But I think anything polynomial will work, basically. So that's actually, so maybe I'll give a brief advertisement for Rich's results, but I didn't get a chance to, what happened? Talk about it, but yeah, so Rich did a lot of the work in proving this, and so it turns out, so when you have these tiles, I guess there's these, you can think of the edges of the tiles are determined by some functions, and they turn out to be essentially sort of polynomials I guess a trigonometric polynomial. And so Rich has some theorem which he calls the quadratic rescaling theorem, and this guarantees that under quadratic rescaling that the limits of the boundaries of the tiles converge to something linear. And there's some sort of very general theorem that tells you when this happens. Actually, this isn't going to make any sense because I didn't actually talk about anything leading up to it. But this is the idea. So there's some very general idea that tells you how you can get linear edges in the limit in this way. And yeah, I think it was ambitious to try to talk about that. So I think this is a good place for me to stop.